If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to the Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
A Football Friday Live right here on Football Full Circle. It is FFC, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. That is the mastermind of the pigskin with Tiger Stadium behind him. That is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. A lot to get to here over this hour up until 1 p.m. Eastern time on Football Full Circle to set the stage for your weekend. Schedule release week in the National Football League and some big NFL headlines to break down. Caleb Williams was trying to do what to the Chicago Bears during the draft process in 2024? What it means now. Some other NFL headlines and, of course, Bill Belichick today on Good Morning America. What does it mean for North Carolina? What did Belichick have to say about his personal relationship with his girlfriend, Jordan Hudson, and her involvement with UNC football? And then, as promised, Lisi guy, now under 100 days away from the start of the 2025 college football season, a look at a few win total bets that we like early here in the offseason before the summer fully gets going in full force. A lot of that and plenty more today on Football Full Circle.
Oh, yeah, the storylines in both, you know, the NFL and college are what really take front and center stage. You mentioned it with Caleb Williams. You know, what was he trying to do in terms of circumventing the process prior to his draft with the Chicago Bears? Not only that, but the reports that came out in the middle of the week that Eberflus and the coaching staff didn't even help him with watching film, and we heard about that towards the end of last year. So, you know, there's a lot of news surrounding Caleb Williams, and it's not all that positive. If you're Ben Johnson and you're the organization right now, you have to get Caleb Williams focused on football. Forget the noise. Allow him to really progress in terms of your offensive scheme. And this team has huge expectations. If he's somewhat checked out, that's a negative for this organization with Ben Johnson in year number one. And the same for Bill Belichick. You know, we understand he's a Super Bowl winning coach, but it's been a long time in terms of him recognizing college talent and being able to coach that talent up. Sure. And at this point in his career, there's more negativity surrounding his off-the-field relationship than there is on the eyes of the program, and that's a negative right now for North Carolina until the season starts.
And I think the main question then, Joe, is this serving as a distraction, as a hindrance to Carolina football? Of course, Belichick and his representation will tell you absolutely not. We'll discuss a little bit later on in this show. So yesterday, the big bombshell report, if you want to call it as such, Caleb Williams trying to circumvent going to the Bears during the 2024 draft process early on, even considering signing with the UFL. Again, that was very early in the 2024 NFL draft process, well before Caleb Williams was even selected first overall in the 2024 NFL draft. A lot of text conversations between Caleb and his father, Carl Williams, detailed in ESPN Seth Wickersham's new book. This was all a part, Joe, an excerpt of that book that comes out in a few months called American Kings, a biography of the quarterback. Again, done by ESPN's Seth Wickersham. So a lot of it is in there, but of course this was a big focus on that big headline that Caleb Williams did not want to go to the Bears during the 2024 draft process. As the book details, though, after meeting with Chicago, visiting the facility, Caleb was all in on the Bears, but it did detail his process, including during his rookie season, saying he wasn't told what to watch when it came to film study. He wasn't told how to watch film by his offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, nor his head coach, the Eberflus, the Eberdoofus in Matt Eberflus. And that's a good one. Come on, that's a good one. And Joe, there was a lot, I think, yesterday in the headline in the report that we all saw on social media about Caleb Williams not wanting to go to the Bears that tried to paint Caleb as the bad guy. In fact, I came away from reading this article and the report thinking even more highly of Caleb Williams than I did after all of his turbulent rookie season and with some optimism entering 2025, because Caleb's fears of going to the Bears are justified. They have never had a 4,000-yard passer. They have a reputation of taking very good and promising young things and not capitalizing on the full ability of that potential. And frankly, Caleb Williams, to me, seems to be a good judge of character, as he understood well before many others in the Windy City or around the NFL that Matt Eberflus was in fact a doofus and that Shane Waldron should never be calling plays again in the National Football League. I actually came away thinking higher of Caleb Williams than I did even before the article was presented.
Yeah, there's a lot of opinion involved in terms of this breakdown, right? The good, the bad, and the ugly, and we're somewhere in the middle in terms of both sides. But you're right about Caleb in the sense of his assessment about the Bears organization as a whole, and we could think about the great quarterbacks throughout Bears history. You know, obviously Jim McMahon, not a world beater in terms of yardage. You could call him a game manager or a blue-collar type of player, and then there was Rex Grossman, and obviously Jay Cutler, that you could say, you know, Mike Tomczak were the pinnacle of maybe Bears quarterbacks, right? So yeah. Caleb wants to be great, you would think, right? Coming out and being the number one overall draft pick, and he wants to be a part of a winning organization. And that was the expectation there with Lincoln Riley and USC. Unfortunately, sure, Things didn't work out that way. They made it to a Pac-12 championship in his first year at the helm. They lost to Utah and then just never got back. But moving to the NFL, you want a fresh start. You want to be recognized, hey, this is my skill set. Can you take me to the next level? And that's where Matt Eberflus and Waldron failed considerably. Now, I will say, I think a lot of NFL coaches, you know, recognizing maybe flaws or weaknesses in young talent, just expect the talent to come around. They don't want to do the coaching anymore, let's say, hands-on, because they're at the NFL level. And that's what separates maybe the Pete Carrolls and some of the better elite head coaches, Dan Quinn, and obviously, you know, the elite now like Sirianni, where, and Andy Reid, where they recognize, all right, this is what I got to do to get this player to the next level, as opposed to other coaching staffs that say, you know what, he should recognize it. It's on him solely. And that's where coaching staffs fail in the NFL, Ben.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Joe. And one of the biggest strides you take from even being a star collegiately and a Heisman Trophy winner in Caleb Williams is the preparation. This is now your professional job. You are expected, especially as a quarterback and a number one overall pick, to be the face of the franchise, to turn things around, to lead things internally, even through some tough times. The Bears lost 10 consecutive games during Caleb Williams' rookie season. He took his lumps. He was literally sacked 68 times in front of one of the most porous offensive lines in recent NFL memory. Sacked 68 times, by far the most, around the National Football League a season ago. And so, Joe, throwing for more than 3,500 yards, 3,541 exactly, 20 touchdowns to only 6 interceptions, not turning the ball over a ton, I give Caleb Williams even more credit because of what this report detailed, that he did not have strong leadership in place in the coaching staff. He did not have those people out there guiding him, tutoring him, getting him ready to be prepared fully at this next level. So although this is a lot about the pre-draft process, before he even met with the Bears in 2024 and visited the facility. I think everything that happened after that pre-draft process and meeting speaks to the strength of Caleb Williams, that after meeting with the Bears at Hallis Hall, he believed he could be the guy to turn around this franchise. He believed that he could be the guy to turn around the bad luck for being a Bears quarterback. And now entering 2025 with Ben Johnson guiding this organization in the bright offensive mind that he is, I think the sky's the limit for Caleb Williams and Chicago. But just what should that expectation now be entering 2025? We'll discuss up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. A bombshell report, kind of, yesterday about Caleb Williams and not wanting to go to the Bears early in the 2024 draft process, but turning around that thinking when he met with the Bears, believing he could be the quarterback finally to break through and lead this Bears franchise once again. Joe, of course, there should be some optimism entering this year with some glimpses on how Caleb Williams played despite a tumultuous rookie season and what he figured out at the end of 2024. And of course, with the signing of new head coach Ben Johnson, who is an incredibly bright offensive mind, albeit a rookie head coach entering 2025. The Bears win total for this upcoming season, 8.5. The under has the hefty juice at -140. If that juice is correct and the odds makers are correct, an 8-9 season at best, 7-10, not necessarily as successful as I believe many hope Chicago can be this year. They're hoping to be a playoff team from a competitive division in the NFC North. In fact, Joe, comparing the win total for Caleb Williams' second year to his rookie campaign, it's slightly worse. It was 8.5 last year. The over had the juice in the Windy City. What do you think is a fair level of expectation for the Bears in 2025?
Well, you want to say with the revamped offensive line and the weapons that they got now in terms of the offseason, you know, Loveland, the tight end from Michigan, that they can elevate and be a 10-win football team. The problem is that, again, it's a new scheme, new head coach. And again, what do we get in terms of continuity with the offensive line? Just because you have better players doesn't mean they're going to actually gel as a unit. I need to see it before I believe it. And at the end of the day, this is a very difficult division. It's a black and blue division with Detroit as the front runners. But you look at Green Bay, you look at Minnesota, not just offensively, but how those both of those defenses came on throughout the regular season. It's just going to be very difficult for Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears to, let's say, get to 500 in the division at 3-3. So when you look at the out-of-conference or the out-of-division, Ben, I think they're right there, 7-8 wins at most again. Again, if I had to, you know, buy a team out in the division, I would much rather buy into LaFleur and Jordan Love back in year number two healthy than I would Caleb and Ben Johnson in year number one right now.
Yeah, it's interesting, Joe, and I don't disagree, at least based on what has been proven. There has been some optimism in Chicago the last few years. It is a talented roster. Ben Johnson's first task coming in was bolster both the offensive and defensive line, bringing that physicality back to the line of scrimmage. He has done a great job in doing that. We know Ben Johnson's system in Detroit. Well, what did Detroit do so well? Building up one of the best O-lines in all of the sport. Building up a great defensive line as well. And using two tight end packages that Ben Johnson is hoping to rebrand in Chicago with the drafting of Colston Loveland, of course, in the top 10 here in 2025. And the promising Cole Kmet at the tight end spot as well. You can see him replicating a lot of what he did so well in the Motor City, hopefully here with the Bears. But does that happen right away? And to Joe's point, the NFC North is a gauntlet of a division around the National Football League. Three of the four teams from this division made it to the postseason a year ago. All three of those teams, Lions, Vikings, Packers, won at least 11 games. We expect the Vikings to regress ever so slightly. Their win total 8.5, but slightly better than that of Chicago, ooh, as the over has a slight bit of juice. Joe, because of that, because everybody in this division has a win total of at least 8.5. The Lions have the highest at 10.5, a little bit of juice on the under, the Packers at 9.5 as well. Of course, it is going to be incredibly difficult to have that strength of schedule within the NFC North. All four teams in the NFC North feature in the 10 most difficult schedules in the National Football League. All four teams, 10 most difficult schedules, you can find them in the NFC North.
Yeah, and I don't think we'll see a team with 14 wins like we saw last year with the Vikings and Detroit battling it out in terms of week 17. You know, I think when you look at just the pricing in terms of the market as it relates to the odds, I think the books got it right. You know, I think whoever wins the division potentially could be 10-7, 11-6 at best. You know, it's that difficult of a schedule on top of how good all of these teams are in the NFC North. So, you know, a lot of pressure on even Detroit. You know, it's one thing, you know, for Detroit to make it to an NFC championship game a couple of years ago, but the bar is so high now when you have the number one overall seed like you did last year and you get kicked in the chops by Jaden Daniels, a first-year starter, that hurts, right? Your margin and window, you know, in terms of, you know, progressing to a Super Bowl starts to close. And now you take away both offense and defensive coordinators and Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, there's no guarantee that Detroit's just going to run away with the division. So that's why right. There's optimism, including, you know, Chicago and Ben Johnson. I think the one thing too, Ben, if we're looking at it as it relates to Caleb, you know, Loveland is a huge upgrade from where Cole Kmet was. And you can look at the games towards the end of the regular season. Caleb Williams failed to even look at Cole Kmet as it relates to the tight end position. If they can get productivity out of that, that'll open up Odunze and everybody else. Luther Burden hopefully, you know, emerges with DJ Moore. Now you're cooking, and that can maybe elevate them to potentially 9 or 10 wins.
I love what they did in the 7th round as well, drafting a Rutgers running back, Kyle Manungai, from the Scarlet Knights. I do think there are a lot of pieces in place for the Bears to be successful, but again, it's not going to be an easy schedule. 7th most difficult around the National Football League based on projected win totals of their opponents. The Vikings have the 5th most difficult schedule. The Lions, the 3rd most difficult slate in 2025. And again, all four teams in the NFC North, 10 most difficult schedules, 10 hardest. The Packers have the easiest of their divisional mates, but still 10th most difficult around the National Football League. So not easy. 8.5 the win total for the Bears. And they will be expecting things to happen rather quickly with a rookie head coach hoping to unlock Caleb Williams. Again, still never a 4,000-yard passer in the history of this Bears organization. And it's a very long and illustrious history in Chicago. Could that happen this year? If the offense is clicking like we know Ben Johnson can get it to, maybe, just maybe. More in football next on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. Of course, Bill Belichick's name has been in the news quite often in the last 2 to 3 weeks, not because North Carolina landed a big-time transfer. UNC is the favorite to win the ACC, but of course, stemming from his personal relationship with Jordan Hudson, all following the CBS Sunday Morning interview where Hudson interrupted it, and their personal relationship kind of became the main headline. This week, Bill Belichick doing some PR damage control, if you will, trying to get the focus back to Tar Heels football. First at ACC spring meetings earlier this week in Amelia Island, Florida, he was live on set with SportsCenter on ESPN discussing that priority and where things stand. And then today, Joe, on this Friday morning, a sit-down interview with Good Morning America and former football player Michael Strahan to promote his new book, quote, The Art of winning. He was asked a variety of subjects about his adaption from the NFL level, now working collegiately for the first time, what he has learned so far on the job in his first few months in Chapel Hill, and of course, his relationship with Jordan Hudson and her influence over North Carolina football. Here's what he had to say, quote, "She's been terrific through the whole process, and she's been very helpful to me. She does the business things that don't relate to North Carolina that come up in my life so I can concentrate on football, and that's really what I want to do. I acknowledged her in the book. She was very helpful on that with the tribute pages and also giving a perspective of the book from kind of a business side. Sometimes I get a little football technical, and she did a good job of keeping me on balance there." Strahan followed up and asked a question what Jordan Hudson means to him, and Belichick replied, "We have, quote, a good personal relationship, and I'm not talking about personal relationships," end quote, trying to end that conversation and Jordan Hudson's impact on UNC football and maybe his life. Lisa, we talked about this earlier in the week after Belichick was at ACC spring meeting. You do not believe it serves as a distraction for North Carolina. You do have to wonder, though, when this story kind of fades into the background. Is it not until the start of the actual football season? By the time we get to summer and we're in fall camp and ACC media days, is it brought back in the limelight once again? That, I think, is the interesting timeline for Belichick and the Heels this summer.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going away, you know, throughout the summer because, again, it's Belichick. You want, you know, a lot of the media needs storylines, and this is the storyline or the flavor of the day. Until we have, you know, their week one starters, Gio Lopez, as long as Gio Lopez is not in a quarterback battle or any type of positional battles that matter, you know, this will be what, you know, monitors and what garners all the attention. But, you know, come August 23rd, or actually they start on the 29th, August 29th, that's Saturday.
The first.
Oh, the first. There you go.
They're
the
that
first.
Final day of Labor Day weekend. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. So, right. So once that game takes place, then that goes in the back door. You know, that goes in the rearview mirror. Unless, Ben, they start out 0-2 or 0-3, right. And then it's the finger pointing. I told you this was going to be a distraction, and you're going to have opinions made. So this has no bearing on whether the North Carolina football team overexceeds their win total, challenges for an ACC championship, or a potential college football playoff berth. What it can do, though, is if the team does start slow, it'll then put negative eyes on the program if they don't get out of the gate and start 4-0 with a winnable schedule before ACC play. That's all it does.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, Lisey Guy, and I really do not think this fades from conversation, especially if some new development comes out, if something publicly happens throughout the entirety of the summer, because the next times we're going to hear from Bill Belichick, it's probably ACC media days in the middle of July. It was noted, I see in the ESPN article here, that UNC recently hired veteran Bears PR director Brandon Faber to help Belichick kind of make his way through this storm. He was with Belichick at ACC spring meetings earlier in the week and also was in New York for that GMA interview on this Friday morning. Of course, there is going to be questions asked, Joe, fair or not, regardless of your perception. They know that at media days, this is going to be a conversation piece. If that is the next time we hear from Belichick and or Hudson, of course, it will be probably first and foremost what is discussed before we get to roster breakdowns and asking about who's the backup left tackle. Whether that's fair or not, that's for you to determine. Whether it impacts North Carolina's actual football success, that's what we'll discuss up next. For the Tar Heels win total entering 2025 at 7.5. Plenty more on Football Full Circle up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Bill Belichick, Jordan Hudson, does any of it have any actual impact on North Carolina football and how many games the Tar Heels will win in 2025. Joe, I don't know if I remember a time where I saw a win total before we got to July fluctuate as much as UNC's has for 2025. Again, when the rumored speculation began that what? Who? Was about to become the new head coach of Carolina, UNC's win total with Bill Belichick in the news was first posted before any other FBS football program at 6.5. The under had the juice. And then after Belichick was hired, it was like, whoa, this is the best football coach we have seen maybe in our lifetimes, maybe in the history of the sport. Sure, he hasn't coached collegiately, and it's kind of a weird pairing. But we know that he's going to have some success, bare minimum, oversaw the juice of 6.5. So much so, the FanDuel Sports bumped the number up to 7.5, and the over had the juice even on the 7.5. And then there's been some of that off-field conversation, more of a focus on his personal relationship than UNC's spring ball practice, moving that 7.5, the juice to the under at -144. But now maybe the waters have been steadied a little bit. That juice on the under just -134. Some buyback perhaps, and how the public is approaching North Carolina football entering 2025. Lisey, you have shared with me a few times, you're kind of optimistic about what the Heels can do this year. How do you approach the win total for North Carolina this upcoming season?
Well, a big portion of it, and college is much different than the NFL. College is all about schedule, right? We know that, you know, travel affects college kids much more and differently than professionals that have been doing it potentially for years, right? So the back-to-backs, the out-of-conference, and the travel really affect this team. But the out-of-conference is winnable. Again, Charlotte, you know, they have a TCU on there that's potentially their toughest at a conference game. They could be 4-0 before they walk into Clemson in Death Valley and face off against Dabo. And that's, you know, the way it shapes up. And assuming they lose that game in 4-1 or 3-2 at worst, they could still run the table because the ACC is not dominant. You know, you look at Miami, that potentially was the second best team behind both SMU and Clemson that battled it out. Carson Beck, okay. Is a good, are we going to get the Carson back from last year at Georgia? Or are we going to get the quarterback from 2 years ago? There's a number of different questions surrounding a number of different programs, including Louisville, Mike Norvell at Florida State. North Carolina can be an 8-win football team, even if they struggle early, because of Belichick is that good on the defensive side of the ball. And that was the weakness, like, you know, 35.6 points per game, Ben. I mean, one of the worst in college football. It's got to get better in year one.
And there was a lot of conversation around Carolina, Joe, a couple of weeks ago before any of the personal relationship stuff about the Tar Heels making a big strike in the spring transfer portal window. Nico Iamaleava, maybe the price wasn't fitting in Chapel Hill, so they get Gio Lopez, who had a sensational freshman season at South Alabama, and we expect him to do a lot of the same. A talented thrower of the football, and of course, a dynamic athlete on the ground as well. And Joe, to your point, hey, can they start 4-0 before that game against Clemson after a bye week, by the way, for UNC at home in Chapel Hill? There would be a lot of excitement entering that matchup against the Clemson team the opening Saturday in October, Joe, that more than likely is going to be top 10, top 5. By the time we get to that stage of this season against TCU in the opener on that Monday night primetime game to end out week number one in Labor Day weekend. They play a road game against Charlotte, but should get the better of the Niners. FCS foe in Richmond, and then a road trip to Orlando against UCF, a new head coach, old head coach Scott Frost, and a couple of new QBs in that room, namely the Indiana transfer in Taven Jackson, who I think will be great under Frost. But Joe, we talked about this in the NFL with schedule release week. One of the great things about the schedule release is not just knowing when and what time, but also because you have those matchups firmly set, the odds makers give you some early looks at those numbers. You get a feel of how the odds makers are approaching these teams week to week, and then what it means for a win total, for a conference price, for a playoff number in the National Football League. Similar story here in college football, right? Because we have that early line for the Heels opener against TCU on that Monday night. UNC is a slight favorite. laying 2.5 against the TCU team that was pretty good once again in 2024 under Sonny Dykes and returns a lot of talent for 2025. The fact that UNC, albeit at home, is even an ever so slight favorite in Bill Belichick's debut is a promising sign.
It is, and so let's think about this, right? Forget talent right now on both squads, right? Let's just look at it from a coaching perspective. Sonny Dykes, a great offensive mind, right? Struggles sometimes on the defensive side of the ball, right? But Belichick is a defensive wizard, and that they gave up 28 points per game. For much of the regular season, North Carolina was giving up 35 points per game, right? In the middle part of the season, they were getting abused. They got a little better at the end of the year. But you give Belichick 6 months of preparation for a week one opponent, you would expect that the guy that's won 6 Super Bowls has his team playing at home ready to win that game. So that's why they're the 1.5, 2-point favorite in that matchup. You know, you look at the big games on the schedule. Clemson's another one. You know what I would take right there? I would take the under in that matchup. Why? Because I would expect that Belichick, you know, has a defensive game plan to potentially contain Clemson. So that's where his expertise matters. The discipline, the scheme, the game planning, that's going to be second to none, you would think, from Belichick going from the NFL to college where he can really make his mark. And that's why I think the books are assessing the value on North Carolina across the board, Ben.
Yeah, I completely agree, Joe. And again, when you look at what UNC can do and where Bill Belichick picks up, he takes over for the legend of Mac Brown, right? The last few years in Chapel Hill, maybe not overly successful in the way that we thought with Sam Howell and Drake May. North Carolina probably should have reached those heights. But even last year, Joe, when Mac Brown got ousted by UNC, they still reached a bowl game. And all 6 years under Mac Brown, they won at least 6 games and reached a bowl eligibility status. So it's not as though he takes over for a team that had cratered and won 2 games a season ago. They were consistent enough that the foundation is there. There is some talent on the roster for Bill Belichick to take advantage of. TCU no slouch, by the way, right? Yep. The national runner-ups now 3 seasons ago. Ooh, how time flies. But TCU, Joe, an 8-win football team last year. They've got a very good quarterback who returns in Josh Hoover and a ton of that offensive production. Now upperclassmen from a season ago. TCU was an 8-4 football team that I think can make some noise in 2025 as well. Again, the fact that UNC, whether it will prove out to be correct, is at least looked out by the odds optimistically as a slight home favorite is a good sign for Bill Belichick. We'll see if they capitalize as a 2.5-point favorite against the Horned Frogs to end out the opening weekend of the college football season.
Yeah, and you just talk about Josh Hoover and his ability to stretch defenses over the top. Had multiple games where he threw for over 300 yards, right? And you talk about a suspect secondary. Again, that's where Belichick, just like Saban, right? You talk about the expertise factor. It's almost they mimic each other. They're best friends. He's expected to bring that Saban-like discipline to North Carolina, and that's the matchup that we have. We have an explosive offense in TCU and Sonny Dykes that spreads it, grip it, and rip it, and now we have a different type of mentality with Bill Belichick. I'm curious to see what Gio Lopez brings from the offensive perspective, because, again, I think they might be more balanced this year than they were last year with Mac Brown.
TCU, a 9-win football team a season ago after their bowl victory against, I believe it was Louisiana, routing the Raging Cajuns 34-3. Plenty more around Football Full Circle, including some early win total looks. Up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stephens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. As promised yesterday, we deliver on this Football Friday, maybe to make a little coin entering the weekend with an early look at win total bets that we like for the 2025 college football season. Lazy guy, if I were to ask you, your favorite win total bet for 2025, Have you made it yet? Is that wager locked in, or is it still a little bit too early?
I have an idea who I'm going to bet in terms of the unders and overs. I haven't bet it just yet, but again, I really like the SEC. So I dive in with both feet, and two overs that I potentially like are two teams that I back on a consistent basis. I love LSU over the 8.5 win total. If they don't get it done this year, I think definitely Brian Kelly's on the hot seat. You talk about the offensive power that they have on top of one of the best quarterbacks in Garrett Nussmeier, wide receivers potentially the best in the country. Love LSU over the 8.5. But, you know, we see this team, Arkansas, get no love each and every year. 5.5 this time. Look, 5.5 is way too low for Sam Pittman. I know, you know, at times they play down to the level of competition, but Talon Green is still one of the best quarterbacks potentially in the conference, can elevate that team. He can take games over, and I know they lose Armstrong and they lose some wide receivers. But Sam Pittman does a great job on the offense and defensive lines. That with a veteran quarterback, Talon Green, they could get to 6 wins just on his legs alone. So give me Arkansas over the total.
And of course, all of these win totals are regular season wins. They do not incorporate a conference championship, a bowl game, or any of the sort. But Joe, two of the last 3 years under Sam Pittman, despite some scuttlebutt in Fayetteville that he could possibly be on the hot seat, they've won 6 games, and then they ended up winning the Liberty Bowl for a 7-win season. Sandwiched in between, of course, a 4-8 year in 2023. A very difficult schedule for Arkansas in 2025. I think that's why a lot of people look at that win total of 5.5. But I would agree, Joe, in terms of trusting a coach that has a little bit of a proven pedigree, that might be a low win total on the Razorbacks. Let me ask you quickly a follow-up on LSU, because, Joe, when you look at the conference odds right now around the SEC, Arch Manning in Texas, the favorites at 3-1. They're 50 cents in front of Georgia, plus 350 for the Dogs, who, of course, got the better of the Longhorns in each of their 2 meetings, including in OT in that SEC championship game in early December. And that's how you cash this bet here. Alabama backed by $1.50, even behind UGA at plus 500. Of course, Kalen DeBoer, a lot to prove in T-Town in year number 2. LSU, Joe, plus 950, fourth best price. Ole Miss rounds out the top 5 at 10-1. I guess what I'm saying is it makes a lot of sense that Texas and Georgia have the 2 best numbers. But from a value perspective, their prices are short relative to teams that are in an 8.5 win total like the Bayou Bengals, who you believe in, when you can get 6 extra dollars of value to win the SEC championship. So if you believe LSU can win 9 games, maybe even 10, is LSU playing in that SEC title game?
Yeah, I mean, you would hope, right? You know, but again, right. You know, SEC championship isn't what it used to be. You could still be an at-large team and still make the college football playoff, right? So that's the biggest thing. And look at Georgia last year, right? Didn't win the SEC championship and obviously, made it to the college football playoff. So you have an area where you potentially can make a run. Georgia did win. Yeah. I forgot.
Georgia beat Texas. Texas would be at large, yeah.
Right, Texas. But that's my point. Yes, I would take the 950. But I'll tell you this, again, unders I like. Ohio State with the huge win total. So, you know, you lose your defensive coordinator, you lose your quarterback, you lose two big play running backs. I mean, those are huge parts of that team to just say, hey, 11-1, no doubt, you know, no doubt about it. I'm selling Ohio State. I would sell Penn State, but I think the number is right there, you know, in terms of good, right on the number. I'm selling Oklahoma State. I said it yesterday. They have not shown me anything from an identity perspective that this team can rebound. You lose Ollie Gordon. You lose Bowman, the veteran quarterback. What do you have in the tank to elevate this team to potentially win 6 games? I don't think he does it. I think he's on the outside looking in. I'd buy Texas Tech. It's another one. And I told you, Kansas in the Big 12.
Yeah, and we'll go through all of those, Lizzie Guy, in just a little bit as well. But it is really interesting when you look at Oklahoma State this year, when you look at some other teams around the SEC, the Big Ten, like you mentioned as well, with the reigning national champs in Ohio State. We'll talk about them in just a little bit. But it is fascinating, Joe, when you look at Arkansas, because I just did a deep dive on the schedule. I had seen there was some conversation about how difficult Arkansas's schedule was. Oh, my God. Week number 3 at Ole Miss. Week number 4 at Memphis. Week number 5, hosting Notre Dame, bye week. Week number 6 at Tennessee. Week number 7, hosting A&M, Auburn, Mississippi State. Might be their only two winnable games in the SEC. Bye week at LSU, at Texas, ending with Missouri. Holy shnikes. If they get over 5.5, man, and they are bowl eligible, all the credit in the world to Sam Pittman and the Hogs.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's not forget, you know, they beat Nico in Tennessee last year 19-14 on a primetime matchup. They did in Fayetteville. You know, what's the situation now with Joey Aguilar at the helm? We don't know. Obviously, the Memphis game, Liberty Bowl's never easy, and Silverfield has done a fantastic job coaching that team up. You have quarterback concerns at Ole Miss. You have quarterback concerns, obviously, at some of the other schools, but you just got to get to 6 wins. And I know it's difficult, but I believe in Taylon Green. You know, I believe they're better than Miss State. I believe that, you know, potentially they can knock off A&M. I'm not sold. Auburn, you know, until Auburn steps up, how could you say that's a loss? You know, I'd much rather buy into Sam Pittman than I would Hugh Freeze at this point. So there are winnable games. One more team with plus money, Vatek. With drones coming back, plus 110 to the over, like that.
We got to get all those listed out there, my friend. We're going conference to conference and explanation. We'll get all of them from Joe Lisi on the other side, and I'll give you the two bets that I have already made in terms of win totals this offseason. Plenty more on FFC up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
All right, a lot of win totals mentioned in our last segment. But, Joe, if you had to confine it to about 3 or 4 of your favorite, what are those teams outside of LSU over 8.5 and Arkansas over 5.5?
I told you I like Vatek with drones coming back and Pry plus 110 to the over 6.5. I think that has value. We talked about Oklahoma in the break with Sean Mateer. Now 6.5. That over is heavily juiced. I might look for a 7.5 to see if they can get to 8-4. I believe John Mateer is that much of an upgrade over Jackson Arnold. But 6.5 at minus 178, I like Oklahoma. And then, again, you know, unders. I really like the under on Ohio State. I just think that's asking way too much for the defending champs to come back from so much and so many question marks. I would sell Ohio State right now entering 2025.
A lot to figure out, of course, for OSU. Their offensive coordinator, Chip Kelly, is gone. Brian Hartline promoted once again. Their defensive coordinator, Jim Knowles, left for conference rival in Penn State, who was entering there as the DC. Yeah, Matt Patricia doesn't have much college experience. Started out as a grad assistant at Syracuse. That was in the late 90s, nearly 3 decades ago. A lot to figure out, and you lose so much talent from a team that was wildly talented in winning a national championship. A lot of those guys, Joe, in the recruiting class of 2021 that made their hay and saw that result in a national championship. When you look on the defensive side of the ball, JT Tuimoloau, Jack Sawyer, so many, Lathan Ransom on that side, Denzel Burke, a lot of the guys that had been in Columbus had understood the difficulties and got them to the mountaintop. They're gone. But here's the optimism for Ohio State. You still have the best receiver in the sport in college football in Jeremiah Smith, and you have one of the best defensive players in the Big Ten, if not nationally, in Caleb Downs. There will never be a talent issue in Columbus. Big issue, though, is the quarterback battle that is set to continue on. It appears into the summer. That would be a battle between Julian Sayin, probably the front runner right now,
and Lincoln Kienholz, who has been in Columbus in that Ohio State QB room for a few seasons. Joe, love the look at Oklahoma. You and I were just discussing, is the juice worth the squeeze, literally, in laying -178 for OU to see 7+ wins? If the bet cashes, the bet cashes. Congrats, you got yourself a win. But I do believe that the additions offensively for OU, with a really good defense that was really good despite the struggles last year under Brent Venables, a lot of that talent returns in Norman, that I'm still going to believe in Brent Venables, the defensive mind. I love the hire of the young Ben Arbuckle, who is the OC at Wazoo, who follows him, his quarterback. So you have the consistency there with John Mateer, an absolute gamer to the nth degree. And of course, notably in the spring transfer portal window, the addition of Jaden Ott, the very talented running back from Cal. Joe, I think Oklahoma is an 8-win football team this year. Schedule difficult for the Sooners, no doubt. It's why the win total is 6.5 to begin. But I think Oklahoma, and I think they might have to, so Venable sticks around for year 4, or I guess, is it year 5 now? Year 5? This is about to be year 4. So for year 5, the year following for Brent Venables, I really think, Joe, Oklahoma could be an 8-win team. So I might wait until some alts come out and I can get a plus money price on OU winning 8 games.
Yeah, it's a great look, and I'm with you. You know, you want to take a flyer as a dark horse. They're the team just because of how good the defense played. And let's not forget, held, you know, Jackson Dart and Ole Miss, I believe, 26 points in the road loss. Held Jalen Milroe and Alabama to 3 in the blowout win in Norman. That defense plays like that all season long. Yeah. They, and you get above average competent quarterback play, which we believe John Mateer is, a dual threat type of quarterback, and plays with a chip on his shoulder. That team potentially could be a 9-3 football team, Ben.
Ain't no layups on this schedule, but there really ain't many layups when you play in the SEC. A road game week number 2, of course, or a home game, excuse me, in Norman against Michigan week number 2 that Tyrone Moore will coach in. Speaking of easy schedules, by the way, Michigan's win total is 8.5. They have by far the easiest conference schedule based on projected win totals in the Big Ten. Here are my 2 win total bets, Lisi Guy. Florida over 6.5. Juiced at -134. Now it's 7.5 for the Gators. The under has the juice. Illinois over 7.5. Pretty hefty juice on the over. I think the Illini are a 10-win, top 10 preseason football team in 2025. That's how I see the Illini this upcoming year. He's Joe Lisi. I'm Ben Stevens. Have a great weekend, everybody. Football Full Circle returns on Monday.